Shalom Aleichem on behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to take 10 for Talmud. We are recording in Silver Spring, Maryland, and are so glad that you can join us. Gittin Lamed Hei, Gittin 35a, pagination is 69. We'll start on the facing page, Masnisin, the new Mishnah, about 12 lines up. Ein almana nifras minichsa yisomim ela b'shavua. A widow is not allowed to collect her ksuba money from the estate unless she makes an oath affirming, stating that she has not yet collected. The Mishnah, however, tells us, Nimnu'u milahashbiya. They stopped asking her to make this oath, and she wasn't able to collect. There was a problem. The problem, as the Gemara will explain, is that the widow would make the oath, but it was not necessarily a truthful oath because she might have benefited somewhat from the estate, taken some asset, but she was more heter. She assumed it was okay because she's putting in so much effort into the children and into the estate and into the transition upon the death of her husband, that she felt entitled to those things, and she still felt that she is entitled to the ksuba. If you think about it, this is so, so normal when there's a breakup in a partnership of any sort. There's discussion as to what the wages are and what the entitlements are and what the benefits ought to be. And it is common for a person to feel entitled to something over and above what the simple technicalities are. Nimnu'u, they stopped having her make this oath. It was a problem. Hiskin Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken, Rabbi Gamliel HaZaken made a legislation, Shetehin Noderes LeYisomim Komasha Yirtzu, that she would make a vow on whatever the orphans wanted. They could say that you're not allowed to eat oranges anymore if you took from the ksuba besides what you're going to collect now. In other words, you need to tell us the truth. What did you take? They could say chocolate. They could say whatever they wanted. V'gove ksuba sa, and then she could collect her ksuba. And the logic here is that if she makes a neder, it'll apply even in the future. Every single time she does that behavior, she's going to know that if she bent the truth at the time of the vow, she's in violation today again. And this would cause her to be a little bit more strict on herself, and she would admit whatever the facts are, if indeed she was entitled to it. So let's discuss it, but you need to put the facts on the table. Whereas, if it was a one-time oath, at the time of the oath, she's mora heter, she decides it's okay, and then she puts it behind herself. She doesn't think about it ever again. And that's where the problem was. The Gemara on the second line of today's daf outlines the severity of the problem. Nimnu'u milahashbiya, they stopped having her make the oath, and instead, as the Mishnah continued, they switched to the vow. Mai taima, why? Ilema misham d'Ravkana, d'Omar Ravkana. There's a reason given by Ravkana about the severity of an oath. Maisa ba'odam echad b'shnei batzores, there was a story of a certain person during a famine, shehifkid dinar zav etzal almano. He gave a golden dinar to a widow to guard for him. V'nichaso bekad shel kemach, and the place that she hid it was in the flour. Va'afa also bepas, and accidentally she baked it into a loaf of bread. V'nasnaso la'ani, and of all the loaves, she ended up giving that one to a poor person. Meaning, She was totally altruistic. She was trying to do good by everybody. She guarded the guy's coin, and she baked bread and gave to the poor during this difficult time. She's a nice lady. L'yamim, and then later on, Babala dinner, the person who owned the coin came back and demanded his coin back that he had entrusted with her. V'amar lahavi li dinri, give it to me. Amra lei, and she said, no such thing. Yehena sama moves be'echad mi bonea shalosa ishem nanesi midinrach klum. The potion of death should affect one of the children of that woman, she was referring to herself, if I benefited in any way from this dinner. Now, perhaps she meant to say quite literally, it disappeared, and I don't know what happened. Perhaps she was not denying that it was given to her, but she's saying, I didn't have any benefit from it, meaning it disappeared, and she wants to be potter, even if she would want to pay, but she still made a statement here, which is very severe. Amru, they say, lo hayu yama mu'atim, it was only a few days, achemes echad mibaneha, one of her children died, uchashashamu chachamim bedavar, and when the chachamim heard the severity of her, the impact of her statement, amru, mami shenishba be'emes kach, a person who makes an oath truthfully. Such things happen. Hanishba al sheker, if a person intentionally makes an oath of falsehood, alachas kama v'kama, how severe it would be. And we can't imagine how serious it would be to have the widow in a regular estate situation make an oath which is untrue. The Mefarshim point out, what kind of benefit did she indeed have from this gold coin? A very innocuous type of benefit. She baked it in the bread. That means that the bread would have needed more flour in order to fill up the size that she had in mind. And because there was a coin in there, she used less flour. Very innocuous benefit. She ends up giving the loaf of bread anyway to somebody else. But to do what she wanted to do would have taken more flour, and on that she had benefit. My taima yanshe de ishtar shi la makom dinner, that the space of the coin was a benefit to her, which means she would have used more flour. Umay mi shenishba be'emes, and a person who swore truthfully, we need to revisit that phrase. It wasn't really truthfully. Once you establish why she was in violation of her oath, so suddenly it turns out it wasn't really truthful. The answer is, kimisha nishba be'emes. It's as if she swore truthfully. She really, really thought that she was saying the truth, that the coin disappeared, unbeknownst to her, with no benefit. All of that explains why we're taking the oath so seriously. However, the Gemara posed this as a question. My irya almana afilu grushanami. Such a law should apply not only to a widow, but also to a divorced woman. She's also going to make an oath that she didn't benefit. And over there, we allowed her to make the oath, and we did not restrain her and get all nervous about it. And the Gemara explains, as we mentioned, Almana Shaini, the widow is in a much more vulnerable position for this type of chet, this type of wrongdoing. De behahi hana'a, de katorcha kame de yasmi, the effort that she puts in towards the orphans, asya la'orue hetera, she tries, or she ends up being Mora Heter, ruling leniently for herself, thinking that wasn't a benefit of consequence, whatever benefit she did get, and In reality, she has to put that information on the table before she collects her ksuba. Related to this, of course, is the absolute caution that a Jew has not to make an oath. You'll notice that caution exists even in the general population, where the statement is often made, "To the best of my knowledge, I swear." And that's the text, because people acknowledge that there's human fallibility. With no ill intent, a person could be misstating the truth, and the consequences are significant. Because what do we have if not for a person's word of affirmation that it's true? And therefore, we really switch to the concept of affirming, because for us, that's really serious enough. And we recognize that a person's word is holy and has to be honest. And the general population recognizes, and they offer, "Do you swear or affirm?" Recognizing that someone might have extreme caution from making a formal oath. Also, when we make a commitment towards charity, for example, we do it b'li neder, without an oath. But anybody who knows realizes that we take a b'li neder quite seriously, and it too is a very respected level of affirmation. Yashar Koach, thank you for joining.